This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Ben Sapol thinks theater can do more than just entertain. He thinks it can be a force for change. While working at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, he started putting his idea into practice, developed Interactive Theater Carolina. It's a performance group that focused on issues like health and social justice. The idea was to make the audience members part of the performance and to get them to confront their stereotypes and bias. In 2009, Ben started Theater Delta in Chapel Hill. And there he's continued his legacy of activist theater and expanded his reach around the country. Ben Sapol is director of Theater Delta, and he joins us in the studio now. Ben, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having us on the show, Frank.
Also with us, two of Theater Delta's community partners, Cecile Rooker and Heather Altman. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Ben, tell us a little more about Theater Delta. Tell us how it works.
Sure. Well, we do Theater Delta does interactive theater for social change. We use theater, and specifically audience participatory theater, to kind of promote dialogue, conversations around social issues. And we work with a wide variety of communities, so we deal with a wide variety of issues.
So how does it work? You prepare some kind of a sketch and then pull up audience members?
Or? Absolutely. So each performance consists of three parts. First is a scripted scene. Second, the audience gets to interact with that scene. The actors remain in character, and the audience gets to question and challenge the characters about what they did in the scene and why. And then finally, we have a facilitated dialogue about the issues where we go, all right, you've seen a scene and interacted with it. Now, what's come up for you? What are you thinking and feeling around these issues?
And that audience, it is in a Q&A format. In other words, they don't take on a persona and act or take
the stage. So we use a couple different techniques to kind of involve the audience. The first is a question and answer technique where the audience is prepped to know that the characters will remain before them and they get to question them about what they did in the scene and why. You know, why'd you do that? Why'd you make that choice? Or what were you thinking in that moment? Or how did that choice impact you? And then we have another level of interaction called our intervention technique where we go, all right, you've seen a scene. We've talked about it. We've established solutions. Now, are there volunteers from the audience who want to come up on stage, replace a character, and we'll try the scene again, and you can try different strategies for success.
What got you interested in this?
Good story.
I hope so.
I started out an actor, actually. I graduated undergrad and I was an actor for 5 years. And then I said, I really love acting, but I think there's more to life. And I developed a passion for education. So then I went to education, taught in education for 3 years. And then I was like, all right, I want to continue teaching, but I want to work with an older population. And so that took me to graduate school. And while I was working on my PhD in theater at CU Boulder, I learned that, oh my God, I can combine my two biggest passions, theater and educate. And theater and the arts are such powerful tools. So I went to my advisor and I said, hey, I want to do theater for social change. And he goes, great. There's a program on campus in Campus Health Services called the Interactive Theater Project at CU Boulder. And so I walked across there, became their assistant director for 2 years, and then the position opened up at UNC.
And these days with Theater Delta, you work with community partners. Tell us about them and how you work together.
Great. Yeah. So we go into communities and we say, what are your needs? What issues do you all struggle with? And they communicate that. And then we go, well, we can use this interactive theater model to help you. And so as we'll see on the show today, we've worked a lot with the medical profession. And we use interactive theater to improve physician-patient communication, to increase empathy, to have the doctor and the patient merge their agendas and work towards the same goal. But also we're going to hear that we can use it to look at social justice issues and specific ageism. And as you'll see, Carol Woods collaborated with us on a project, and we went into the Chapel Hill Carrboro schools and worked with high school students and middle school students around ageism, stereotypes, myths, dispelling those, and also how to be an ally for people who are targeted.
Well, Heather, you are one of those community partners. Mm-hmm. Tell us who you represent and how you're going to work this theater into your plan.
Sure. Thank you. I work at Carol Woods Retirement Community. We're a continuing care retirement community in Chapel Hill, and we care very deeply about the care of our own residents as well as advancing best practices in aging services for all older adults. And one of the issues that comes up all the time is this issue of workforce development. How are we going to encourage the next generation of students to be interested in careers in aging? We want to have them see that it is exciting and honorable work. And so to that end, we're always looking for creative and innovative ways to go into the school system to excite students to to expose themselves to thinking about how they want to work with older adults. And many times we come against these negative perceptions of aging. And so when I found out about interactive theater, and I can tell you how I did that, it sort of seemed like a neat thing to try.
Well, how did you find out about it, and how's it going to work?
Yeah. So we have a former board member who I was working with who went and actually saw a program that Ben had. It was on depression and suicide, interestingly. And she came back and said, there is this really, really cool medium, and I think we should explore this in terms of older adults. So I went to watch one of the performances, and I saw Ben tackle racism, sexism, classism, and homophobia in a little over an hour. And I thought, if he can do that, he can do ageism. And so we were able to pull funding both from Carol Woods as well as from a grant we had from the Duke Endowment to help commission Ben to create a performance around negative perceptions of aging and challenging middle school students and high school students to rethink how they approach older adults. And the end was very successful.
I want to talk more about that, but I want to hear from Cecile, too, who is also a community partner. Tell us about who you represent and how theater is going to work for you.
I actually am an independent consultant, and so I have several clients that I work with, one of which is the University of North Carolina's Functional GI Motility Center. And so we first collaborated with Dr. Sapol in an attempt to teach medical students how to communicate better with their patients, especially if you have a patient that might be a little more difficult, has a difficult disease state, or you're just having issues communicating clearly to the patient what they need to hear. So we got a generous grant from Takeda Pharmaceuticals and their funding medical education department, and that began on my collaboration with Ben. So we did that with UNC. I also have a client that's called the Rome Foundation, and it is an international nonprofit organization that specializes in functional GI disorders. So we worked with Ben. We commissioned him to come in and work on multicultural issues surrounding IBS. So especially
IBS.
In today's irritable bowel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So in today's society, you have many cultures kind of coexisting together. So a physician might see patients from different countries in a single day. So what do you have to think about from their multicultural backgrounds and how you treat that patient? You know, what sort of things, sort of cultural norms are going to affect how that patient perceives their illness, how they handle suggestions from the doctor, which cultures want to collaborate with the doctor and which cultures actually want the doctor just to tell them what to do.
Right,
and
right.
So we worked. We had a wonderful performance in Milwaukee where we had it was an international conference on irritable bowel syndrome, which was hosted by the World Gastroenterology Association and the Rome Foundation. And it was so successful that the American Gastroenterology Association and the Rome Foundation brought the same program back for another conference here in Chapel Hill that talked about doctor-patient communication as a whole. And currently, we are working together. My new client is the Drossman Center for the Education and Practice of Biopsychosocial Medicine. And Dr. Douglas Drossman has actually been a medical advisor for all of these projects that I've done with Ben Sapol. And one of his major passions in life is the doctor-patient communication and wanting to teach physicians how to speak better with their patients. But also now we're looking at the flip side. So now we're looking at patients. And so we've got another grant from Takeda Pharmaceuticals. We're going to go into Baltimore, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill with three performances. And we're going to work with patients on how to speak to your doctor.
Well, Ben, it sounds to me like you're going to have to do an awful lot of research going in before you prepare a program, right?
Absolutely. So we deal with the widest variety of issues. So we do intense research on each topic. We have a protocol when we develop our scenes, and it starts with we do all the academic research, we do a lit review, and we read all the literature. And then we do a lot of human research. We do interviews and focus groups on the issues with all the parties involved. In the case of physician-patient communication, we talk with physicians and we talk with patients. You know, and how do you experience these issues, you know, when you're meeting with your doctor, when you're meeting with your patient? And between the academic research and the interviews and focus groups, that we process that as a group and we develop our learning outcomes. And from the data and the learning outcomes, we develop a scene. And because the scene is based on so much research, it's hyper-realistic. And then from there, we let the medium kind of take over the script, the audience to interact and engage the issues, and finally the conversation. And by the time we get to the conversation, people are so excited to react and to name the issues and to propose solutions. And so we're making an impact.
Do you have to get to the level of, in particular, if we're talking about doctor-patient communication, in the abstract we think, well, for one thing, doctors need to learn to listen. They need to learn vocabulary that's going to be, understandable to their patient, et cetera, and take time. In general, you can do that. Now, the difference between the way a Burmese woman might express her digestive disorders and a Haitian man, right. Do you have to get down to the granular level there?
Absolutely. So in this particular project that we took to that international medical conference in Milwaukee, we were looking at a Nigerian patient, a Latina patient, and an Eastern European patient. And so we actually brought in experts that tend to work with each of those populations to kind of tell us these are some of the cultural patterns that you might witness in the room. And again, it's a balancing act because we want to peg to cultural patterns, but we also want to just value each individual. And so while we do pay attention to these cultural patterns, it all comes back to physician-patient communication. And our outcomes around that are active listening, deep listening, increasing empathy and care, and then also the merging of the agendas of the doctor and the patient. Because sometimes in that medical exam room, they do have kind of competing agendas. The doctor is very focused on information, diagnosis, treatment, and the patient, of course, is probably looking for reassurance and have some ideas themselves.
Heather, let's talk about ageism and what happens when this performance gets on the stage, in that gymnasium at the middle school. What have you seen? How do these kids respond and what kinds of issues come up? Are they honest about sort of how they feel about old folks?
Yeah. They see it. There's definitely lots of giggles and, oh, wow. And the scene is set up to show a conflict between two teenagers and how one of the teenagers is being quite disrespectful to an older adult. And so they really they see the scene and then they really give that character a hard time. During that question and answer period, that comes right after it. Her name is Sarah, I think, and they say, Sarah, why are you being so difficult? Why are you being so rude? And they really go after her, and they pound her with questions. And then it makes them, we do an evaluation afterwards, and so they even write down about how the experience has been so eye-opening. You know, I wouldn't want my grandmother treated that way. I wouldn't want to treat my grandmother that way. I hope I don't treat my grandmother that way. And then since I am an aging service professional, I need to sort of put out there that we also ask the question, well, given what you've experienced, would you consider working in aging and rethink that? And 56% of the students from the first time around said, yeah, I would consider a career in aging now after seeing this and thinking about it really challenges their perception of how much they have demonstrated an honoring of older adults.
Cecile, what's going to happen is Heather's going to have to wait a few years to find out how this is paying off. But you're working with the medical community. Is there any way, is there any follow-up, any way to know how much impact this has had?
Well, we do a survey at the end of the performance, and with the medical students at UNC, it was very positive responses from the medical students saying that these are things that they are definitely going to think about as they enter into their medical career. We haven't actually had any sort of follow-up to those students to date now that they were second-year students, so it'll be another year or two before they're actually practicing medicine. But it's definitely been something that's been very positive. I know with the international performance that we did in Milwaukee, I've spoken just informally with several of the attendees after that have said how important that was to them and some things that they didn't think about that they were doing with some of their patients that they didn't realize was offensive or they didn't realize could be misconstrued in other cultures other than the United States.
Seems to me, too, it could generate a demand for more data on precisely how various cultural groups communicate. I mean,
right.
There's probably precious. The first thing you learn is there's not enough information about
right.
this, right?
Well,
one of the things that Ben put together for our performance with the international was a booklet that we gave to all the attendees. And in that, it detailed there was a chart with different cultural things to think about with the different regions in the world. And so there was a lot of handouts and materials that we gave to the attendees so that they would have that after the performance as well.
And that's a trend. So that's what we try and do is that at the end of every performance, we want them to continue these conversations. And so we connect them to resources so that they can do that.
It's interesting to think about this in targeted communities, ageism, to deal with the medical community. How about the groups at large to tackle social issues like racism, where we don't have a target group necessarily? Can you do this? Does it work? Have you tried it?
Absolutely. So we deal with a lot of social justice issues all the time. And certainly in those, there are target issues, right? If we're going to do a performance on racism, we're going to look at those who are targeted based on their race. We're going to look at those who are doing the targeting. And this day and age, it's very kind of, oh, it's very subtle, and it's, we call it microaggressions. And then we're also especially looking at how to develop allies, people who are bystanders, who are kind of watching these microaggressions happen, and we kind of want to encourage them to try strategies to intervene. But you're right that it's difficult, that often we are a result of many intersecting identities based on all our social identities, race, and gender, and class, and sexual identity orientation, and physical ability and disability, and age. And because we're a product of these intersecting identities, it's all very complex and can be difficult. We can carry privilege in some areas, but then be targeted for other areas. And so what we try and do is make those connections. And it's interesting, the performance that Heather saw was the performance that we did back at UNC for the first-year orientation students. And yes, we did try and tackle intersecting identities, race, class, gender, sexual identity orientation, in an hour. And every character targeted another character for one of those identities, and every character got targeted for one of those identities. And then the conversation followed.
I want to thank you all for being on the program today. Ben Saipol, director of Theater Delta, Celia Rooker and Heather Altman, our community partners with Theater Delta. Thank you all for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
You can find out more information about Theater Delta at theaterdelta.com. And you can find out about us at stateofthings.org. That's our program for today. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.